He scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get it going on this Tuesday, November 29th, coming at you from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Yeah, it's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. A busy hour one coming your way from the Dome. We've got, we've got lots to talk about when it comes to Matthew Tkachuk and his return to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. On top of that, Jonathan Huberdeau back on a line with Elias Lindholm. And the Flames, they need a win to kick off a five-game homestand. All of that coming your way in the next hour here on the program. But it's a Tuesday, and we kick off hour one by saying hello to our NHL insider. It's time for Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler. With inventory shortages across the city, it's the perfect time to sell your vehicle for cash. Visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And we welcome in Frank now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. Hello, Frank. How are we doing? Do we have Frank? Frank, you there?
Hey there. Hey, Pat.
Hey, there you are. What's going on? How are you?
I'm good. Of all the things you mentioned to keep track of tonight at the Dome, you forgot to mention Dan Vladar starting in net, which I found most interesting.
Third start in four games for Dan Vladar as well. And I know that if you were to just take a look, Frank, at the win-loss record, it would say one thing. If you were to take a look at some other numbers, though, especially of late, he's been giving them some really high-quality goaltending. So I also raised an eyebrow when I saw that at the Dome and when I saw that at Morning Skate. They're here to kick off a five-game homestand. They're coming off a six-game road trip. Would be traditionally a place they'd go to Markstrom, and instead they're going to Vladar for the third time in four. I find that quite interesting.
Yeah, and look, fact of the matter is the Flames are in a spot where they need points. They need wins. And at this point, at least statistically, he's given them a better shot than Jacob Markstrom. And as much as you see glimpses and signs that you think Markstrom may be turning the corner, a couple of the games during that trip, he actually looked pretty good. I saw him up close and personal when they were in Philly, and I was thinking he looked confident again that, hey, look, he's still got an 877 over his last six games, I think it is. So not good. And Vladar gives them a better shot, and they're in a spot where they absolutely need it now. Like, you can't – it's time to stop playing nice. You gotta get after it.
Yep, they need wins right now, no doubt about it. So curious to see how this story progresses, too, over the next little bit. Hey, tell me about that contract in Dallas a little earlier today. Roope Hintz signs an eight-year extension at $8.45 million. How'd you read it? How'd you react to the big contract signing earlier?
I think it makes a ton of sense for the Dallas Stars. You know, I saw the reaction on social media, Pat, and it was really funny because people were saying right away, oh, look how big that contract is. The Stars are overpaying for Roope Hintz. And I say, all you're doing is telling on yourself that you don't watch the Dallas Stars closely, because he is a handful to play against. He's incredibly fast. He's got speed to burn. He plays in his own end. He plays PK. He does all sorts of different things for that team. And, oh, by the way, he's a really consistent point getter. 3 years now he's going to be at a point per game. That's expensive. But what I find more interesting than that is the structure of it, in that he ends up with a mostly identical contract to Miro Heiskanen. And you think about what a foundational pillar and piece Heiskanen is for that team. The fact that Hintz is matching it goes to show you how important they think Hintz is to the Dallas Stars in their future. So a massive $67 million contract extension, and I think one that's deserved and one that's going to age quite well for Dallas.
I'm with you 100% on that front, and seeing him up close and personal last couple of playoff series the Flames have had against Dallas, you're like, yeah, this guy is a damn good hockey player. So I'm with you 100% on the deal. I quite like it. The only question I have is, will, because it kicks in next year at 8.45, is this going to be a contract that they, like, are they going to have to do anything cap-wise? Is it going to cause them any cap crunch starting next season, knowing they've got a couple of deals on the book right now that are not so cap friendly?
Well, I mean, to answer the question, you first got to tell me how much is the cap going up by. Like, that's right. A big question and big part of it. But they have they're in a spot where, hey, like, is Joe Pavelski coming back? And if so, what's he going to cost? What's the deal with Denis Gurianov, who's a pending restricted free agent, that I think is an important question to ask. But you're right in that there's not a ton of wiggle room there. They're going to get a little bit of a benefit from Anton Khudobin falling off the books. His cap hit 2.2 is buried in the minors. But you're in a spot where pretty much everyone else is locked in, and you're taking hints from 3.1 all the way to 8.45. That's a big jump. And so they've got essentially $71 million committed to next season. If the cap's going up $3.5 or $4 million, well, then they're absolutely fine. But if it's another small increase, they're going to be squeezed just like they were going back to the Robertson contract and when that was signed during training camp, because they probably would have liked to have gone longer with Jason Robertson and could have stretched to get there. What a bargain that contract looks like already.
No kidding.
But they're in a spot where that's kind of all they could afford. Like, they whistled through after getting Robertson done with, like, you know, a few $10,000 or $30,000 to spare. So they could be in for another squeeze if the cap isn't going up much.
And do we have any idea at this point? Like, is there any inkling in terms of how much it is going to go up? Do teams have a good idea, or is that still in the ether in a lot of ways too?
It's still to be determined. And it's funny because talking to a number of teams around the league, like, their big thing is, yeah, the league has told us to be prepared for the potentiality of a $3.5 to $4 million increase. But no one is taking that with anything else than a grain of salt, because the league has made a lot of significant projections in the past that haven't come to fruition. And so all the revenue, every single dollar and cent needs to be added up before they can really get to that point and get a firm projection. And we're a long ways off from that. We have a better idea in March. But even in March, after the trade deadline, teams go through the exercise thinking they're going to have more, and sometimes it ends up being less. So they're all kind of, I think, operating on the sense or the belief that it's only going up an additional million. And if they get anything more than that, then it's going to be gravy.
Okay. Last one on the Hintz deal and kind of related to it. The next big contract out there when it comes to center icemen who need deals is Bo Horvat. How much of a comparable might Hintz's deal be to the number Horvat gets, whether it's in Vancouver or elsewhere?
Well, I think certainly if you're in the Bo Horvat camp and you're watching him tear up this season with 17 goals, you're sitting there saying, hey, this is another great comparable with the UFA years that were purchased here. You know, this is another nice little feather in our cap as we could potentially be going to market. I think the problem maybe is that I think not universally, but I would say the consensus reaction among managers and talent evaluators would be that Hintz is a better player than Bo Horvat. And certainly at least production-wise, you could argue that's the case. Bo Horvat seems to be having what is a special season and definitely a statistical outlier for him in his career. And the Canucks were already in a spot last year where they paid a player to stay in JT Miller, who was putting together a statistical outlier season with 99 points. I don't know if he'll ever get there again. So that's something to be considered. I did check in on the Horvat file again yesterday, and there's nothing new to report. I don't think there's been any substantive discussions with Bo Horvat and the Canucks going back to before training camp. So as much as they say that they want to keep him, I still believe the most likely path is for Horvat to be traded. And on top of that, if indeed, as they've gone through this season and they're trying to figure out what exactly this team is again, now I believe tied with the Flames in points, where that come from all of a sudden?
I know
that they're in a spot where, you know, they got to figure it out. And if that's how they want to deal with Bo Horvat and they want to keep him, they've done a really funny job of trying to show it.
Yep. Agreed on that front. Frank Saravalli is with us. Our Daily Faceoff NHL insider joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. You know, when talking about, and I don't think that this is related at all to the Roope Hintz conversation at all, but was just as it got me thinking and going through the crop of UFAs and RFAs for next season. And I just, the guy that jumped out, I know he slowed down a little bit here of late after his red hot start, but the guy that stood out is Jesper Bratt. He's having a really good season. The Devils are having a ridiculous run here and are putting together a dream season for themselves. Like, what is that next contract look like? Is he's also a pending RFA?
It is very expensive. As you see Kuzmenko in Vancouver, his agent Dan Milstein tweeted over the weekend, as he, I think he has 20 points now in 21 NHL games. He tweeted a bunch of money bag emojis, and he doesn't represent Jesper Bratt, but that's exactly what I was thinking, because for all the excellent moves that Tom Fitzgerald, their GM, made over the summer, bringing in John Marino, which seems like an absolute steal of a trade, and then also Vitek Vanacek, who's been a big upgrade in net for them, and seems to be a more than worthy gamble, I think they're really going to regret grinding Jesper Bratt in the way that they did this past summer, because that was at times seemingly a knockdown, drag-out fight. They went right up to, the arbitration hearing. They finally got a deal done 1 year at 5.45. He's someone that, for whatever reason in their organization, as a sixth-round pick, a guy who has come in, worked his way, and earned every opportunity that he's gotten, to have a 73-point year last year and, you know, breakthrough, I think they were kind of thinking, hey, can he do it again? It was such a big jump from his previous year and his previous experience in the NHL. He's a star, like a legit star in this league. And they didn't go long-term. I think they made a long-term offer. I think the Bratt camp found it offensive, and they never really even got to serious talking, I don't think, on what that might look like, because they were never in the same ballpark. And it might be one that they end up regretting.
We see that Jacob Chychrun is back in Arizona, and he's playing. He's played four games now since getting back in the lineup. And with him back, all of a sudden, the Jacob Chychrun trade speculation has kicked back up. It had gone kind of quiet because he wasn't playing to start the season. We've been talking about Chychrun, it feels like, for 2 years now, in terms of where is he going to end up and how that's all going to fall. Is that something that we finally get an answer on this season? Is that your anticipation, that this long-awaited deal finally gets done sometime this year?
My God, I hope so. Because you've been asking it, I've been answering it, because that's how long it's been going on. And by all accounts, to this point, through the first four games with the 3 points that he's put up, north of 23 minutes a night, I think a couple games he touched 24. The reports that I've talked to from scouts, and I watched every shift of his first game back, what does his mobility look like? How involved in the play is he? What's his confidence like coming off of these injuries? It all seems to be trending in the right direction for Jacob Chychrun, and he's someone that obviously teams are watching really closely, but the Coyotes are as well, because they want to know, with the high price that Bill Armstrong has set, you know, multiple first-round picks or equivalents, that he needs to be able to justify the ask. And I think with the start that Chychrun has had, he's looked pretty good, that they're in a spot to uphold that asking price.
Okay.
Now, whether someone is willing to pay it is another story entirely. But I think there's probably someone out there that gets desperate enough to try and pull something like that off. And they're in a spot where Chychrun wants to go, and the better he plays, maybe the more pressure is put on Armstrong and the Coyotes to finally get something done and get him out of there.
And the fact that it is not done yet, is that strictly a comment on how high that ask is?
It's partially that, but it's also based on what would his level of play be at. He's got a significant injury history. He's coming off of two significant surgeries. His first game back 8 days ago was his first game since March 12th. That's a long time.
Yep.
And I think teams watched last season, Pat, and they said, well, what is Jacob Chychrun? Is he the guy that trended toward a number one, scoring a league-leading among defensemen 18 goals in 2020-21? Or is he closer to the guy that looked more like a number three last year in Arizona before his injuries? And so it's all those things. The ask never wavered, and the play did. And at that point, with the injuries added in, it became a really complex transaction to make.
What as we're heading into, now we're past the Thanksgiving Day mark in the United States, and for many a significant date when it comes to, you know, just around the league and workings around the league. Are we talking about things picking up, Frank? Are we talking about buzz around the league and what you're hearing in terms of player movement and all that type of stuff? Is it busier right now?
I believe it is. I think you saw a couple of those minor transactions that happened last week, Timmins going to Toronto from Arizona, as well as Reeves going from New York to Minnesota. Teams have been talking. I think there's a few teams that are really antsy and would like to better their team now to give themselves a shot for the playoffs. I think there's a subset of other teams that are out there that would like to do something but don't have the cap space and or the assets to do it. Think about a team like Pittsburgh. They don't really have a ton of guys on their roster that they can trade. No one's going to take Kasperi Kapanen. And, oh, by the way, they don't have cap space. So they'd like to make a change but are sort of handcuffed. And, you know, I think at this point when you get to Thanksgiving and now as the calendar turns over to December, teams not only know what they have, but I think more importantly what they don't. And so they're going through that process where, hey, like – team pro scouts are well in tune now with what is potentially out there around the league. It's more thin at certain positions than others. And there's just that opportunity now for teams to really hone in on what they might want to get. And I think those conversations have certainly heated up.
Okay. Anything else that we should be keeping our eye on? Anything else that you're tracking right now these days, Frank?
I'm tracking what the reaction is going to be like for Mr. Tkachuk tonight. I mean, I'm from Philly, so I know what the reaction would be like in my town. I don't know what it would be like in your town because there were some meritorious years of service there. But at the same time, he also raised his hand and asked out of not just the city but the country and could have put this Flames team, and this is not hyperbole when I say it, in a spot where they basically had to tear it down and rebuild. And obviously the handiwork of Brad Treliving this summer, which hasn't totally gotten come to fruition yet on the ice in terms of everything coming together. But because of that, they're in a better spot and allows them to, maintain a competitive window. But had it not, yep, I think the reaction would be totally different tonight. And in a way, like, I would understand any resentment that Flames fans harbored based on the pure season that Tkachuk is having at this point. Like, yep, Matthew is such a unique player, and the fact that he's on pace for a career high in 119 points and yet another 40-goal season, to me, it speaks to how special he is. He's a true franchise player. I believe that. And they're in a spot where think of all the guys that have come Calgary's way. Weegar, Huberdeau, they've been underwhelming to start. Johnny Gaudreau leaves also after a career season and isn't back to that level. Matthew's the only one who is, and he was the youngest of the group on top of that.
Yep.
And so I'm down with whatever way the Flames fans want to react. You bought your ticket. You can say whatever you want. I think the best part about it is, however which way it goes, Matthew is perfectly okay with being the villain, too.
Yes, as he showed against Edmonton. Great stuff, Frankie, as always. Appreciate it, pal.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one, Pat.
We'll talk to you next week. He's Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider, and he's brought to you by South Trail Chrysler. With inventory shortages across the city, it's the perfect time to sell your vehicle for cash. Visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, hour one continues. It's time for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, home of the Mercedes-Benz AMG GLC 43 with the 4MATIC all-wheel drive system. Perfect for winter. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. .ca. My name is Pat Steinberg here at the Scotiabank Saddledome with Logan Gordon and the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Willis. Hi, boys. Welcome to this hour.
Hello.
As we were talking to Frank Saravalli earlier this hour, Matthew Tkachuk was speaking to the media over in the Ed Whalen Media Lounge, and you were both there in attendance. You heard him speak. So straight up, what do we think, guys? Is Matthew Tkachuk going to get booed by some, by all, by none of the faithful on this Tuesday night here at the Dome as he makes his one and only trip back here this season?
I think at the start of the game, and when they run a video tribute for him, there will be way more cheers than boos. That's my gut feeling. But if Matthew Tkachuk plays the way Matthew Tkachuk has played for his entire NHL career, I think those cheers will start turning to boos as the game goes on. Just look at last night. Now, he has never been a big fan of the Oilers. He talked earlier this season about how the Oilers have gone from being his most hated team to his second most hated team,
right?
Because now that he's with the Panthers, he hates the Lightning. But obviously, he was a huge part of bringing the Battle of Alberta back. So he still doesn't like the Oilers. That's pretty clear. And he scores in last night's game up at Rogers Place at Edmonton. And I don't know if he's been hanging out with Hulk Hogan down in South Florida, but he did the old Hulk Hogan hand to the ear to the fans at Rogers Place. So if he happens to score a goal and does that to the fans here at Scotiabank Saddledome, then the cheers will turn to boos pretty quickly. But you know what? We watched him grow up. And it really just hit me talking to him for the first time as a member of the Panthers that you and I were on the draft floor in Buffalo.
Yep.
When he was selected sixth overall back in 2016. And he came and joined us that night and chatted with us about being a first-round pick and being a member of the Flames. And the one thing that did jump out to me about what he just said when he was addressing the media here at the Dome was that, you know, he came here as an 18-year-old. He thought he knew everything. In hindsight, he didn't know much, but he grew up here and talked about all of the memories on the ice and off the ice. And you know what? He was huge in reigniting the Battle of Alberta, which is better now than it's been since the late 1980s or early 1990s. And, you know, his rivalry with Zach Cassian and others on that team, I think, really was what poured the fuel on the fire of that rivalry again. And when you look at his numbers, almost a point-a-game player here during the regular season, 382 points in 431 games over six seasons. And, you know, he did give Brad Treloving a heads-up that he wasn't open to signing here long-term. It allowed the Flames general manager to pull off what I think is the biggest trade that the team has made in decades, maybe in the history of the franchise. They acquired Jonathan Huberdeau, Mackenzie Weegar, Cole Schwindt, and a first-round pick, despite the fact that they were kind of painted into a corner. So they got really good return for Matthew Tkachuk. So to make a long answer just a little bit longer, I think there'll be way more cheers than boos at the start, but I think that'll start the turn as the game goes on.
I do think he is going to get booed. I think that, to Derek's point, I do think during the video tribute at the Saddle Dome on Tuesday night that there is going to be a moment for that. That'll be the moment for Flames fans to express their appreciation for Matthew and what he did over the six seasons, because I do take him at his word that he wanted to be successful while he was here and that he put everything into it. But at the same time, he also said no to this franchise.
Yep.
He also said after his best career year with the team and after the team's best season with him there, that he didn't want to be here anymore and that he wasn't willing to explore long-term options. So you can spin it however you'd like, But at the end of the day, it was still him saying no to this team and no to this market. And I can understand why, from a Flames fan's perspective, you would be upset about that. And if you buy a ticket and you're at the Saddle Dome on Tuesday night, I'm in the camp that says you have every right to express yourself however you want to. And while I do think that you're right, Derek, that there is going to be an appreciation for what he accomplished, and you went through the numbers and everything there, and they're no small feat. He was a great player while he was here. I still think that there's a good amount of this fan base that's going to want to say, okay, you have all these nice things to say about Calgary, and you have all these memories, and that's great, but you also don't want to be here. So I don't, you know, have those positive feelings towards you anymore, and I won't blame anybody that goes on either side of that debate tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to be mixed. I really do. I think that there are going to be some who feel like that, who are like, well, we listen to the podcast, we read, we know what's going on. We're on the message boards, we're online, we're on Twitter, we know what's going on. And you called the GM and said you didn't want to sign here long term. You don't want to be here. And I think there will be some who will feel a little jilted by that. And I think you're very within your rights to feel that way. At the same time, I also think there will be some of like, hey, you know what? Good on him. He gave us a heads up, and we can't control what his decision is, but he was here as a first-round pick, and he helped us get a great return in a trade.
That'll soften the blow for sure.
And he did lots of good things here. He had 104 points, and he was a multi-time 30-goal scorer, and he, to your point, lots of great moments, especially against the number one rival, and I think everybody will remember the Zach Cassian still shot where Cassian's horizontal, and he's looking down at him, and you're like, oh, There will definitely be some good memories, too. So I think it's going to be mixed. And I can definitely, to your point, Derek, see as it goes along, maybe it being a little less mixed and maybe a little bit more towards displeasure by the end, depending on how Matthew goes about his business and how the game goes. But, I think it'll be mixed even to start. I think there will be some who are not as eager to stand and applaud. And that doesn't make you classless or anything like that. It's not like it's all fun and games and good-natured, but I think there will be some who will enjoy using the three-letter word, the boo word.
Yeah, Matthew Tkachuk's going to Matthew Tkachuk. I think once the puck drops, he will be himself. And let's be honest. You love players like Matthew Tkachuk when they play for your team, and you hate them when they don't. And for me, that's the sign of a great player. And he is a great player. There's no doubt about that. And it's interesting because there are three former core players who are going to be coming back to Calgary. So we get Matthew Tkachuk back tonight. Then you get Sean Monahan back on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least, Johnny Gaudreau will be here. I have no question in my mind that Sean Monahan will get a standing ovation. No question in my mind. I don't even think it. I don't think you'll hear one boo in the building when Monahan comes back. What are they going to boo him about?
Yep.
Playing on one leg, playing with one arm, playing with no hips. I mean, the guy gave everything he had to this franchise and played through a lot of injuries over the years. We'll see what happens with Tkachuk, and I wonder what's going to happen with Gaudreau. I really do. I think it's going to be the same sort of thing where there are going to be a lot of people who think, you know what, for 8 years, this guy was electrifying. And, you know, he on a lot of nights was worth the price of admission on his own. He scored the biggest goal since 2004 in the seventh and deciding game of last season's first round series versus the Stars to set up the first battle of Alberta in the Stanley Cup playoffs in 31 years. But then there are going to be people that said, you left in free agency. You didn't choose Calgary. You didn't choose the Flames. And I guess you can say the same things about Tkachuk. So I'm anxious to see what kind of reception he gets tonight. But the one thing I can almost guarantee, there are going to be more boos by the end of the game than there will be at the start of the game.
Yeah, recency bias is probably one of those things that counts into that, too.
Daily Flames Roundtable. I'll read some text a little bit later on here this hour on Flames Talk. It's the Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Logan Gordon, Pat Steinberg to the Flames and kind of the actual what happens on the ice side of things. Guys, what gives us confidence that Jonathan Huberdeau going back with Lindholm and Toffoli is going to be more successful this time around than it was earlier?
Jonathan Huberdeau is playing at a much higher level. Elias Lindholm is playing at a much higher level. And Tyler Toffoli, in my opinion, and I know there are still some people out there that see it differently, Pat, and you deal with these people in overtime quite on a regular basis, but I think Tyler Toffoli has been as consistent as any Flames forward this season. And the numbers would indicate that as well. So, you know, he's been consistently good, but Lindholm didn't get off to a great start, at least not offensively, and Huberdeau didn't look like himself, but he looks way more comfortable, way more confident. He's making lots of plays. Mm-hmm. He's the best passer on the team, and Lindholm's the best shooter on the team. So I just think that that has the potential to be a match made in heaven. And Toffoli's got a great shot as well. Both of those guys can score. And Huberdeau is as good a playmaker as you'll find in the NHL when he's right. And I think he's a lot closer to being right and to being the guy who led the league in assists with 85 and finished tied for second in the Art Ross Trophy race with 115 points last season now than he's been at any point in time during his tenure with the Flames. So he's a great player. Lindholm's a great player. Toffoli's a really good player. And I think sometimes it just takes time to build chemistry and to figure out timing. And for Lindholm, he's got two different wingers. You know, we just talked about Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. He lost two 40-goal, 100-point players from last season. So it's been a big adjustment for him. And as far as Huberdeau is concerned, you go from a Panthers team that plays east-west and that is content to win 6-5 to a Flames team that plays north-south and wants to win 1-0. That's a big adjustment as well, but I think he's started to turn the corner. And when I just look at the skill sets of these three players, so you've got Lindholm, who is one of the best two-way centermen in the league. You've got Huberdeau, who's one of the best playmakers in the league. And you've got Toffoli, who is an elite shooter. I just think sooner or later, it's going to click for these three guys. And I'm not sure if it'll happen 5-on-5 or on the power play first, but sometimes when you can build something on the PP, that carries over to 5-on-5. So, you know, the power play has been a bit of a sore spot for the Flames of late, especially their first unit, I would say. So maybe they score a big power play goal, and that gets them going tonight. But I do think that sooner or later, the three guys are going to find it and start clicking.
Yeah, I think the confidence level that they are make it what it should be or closer to what we expect it to be this time around, I think comes from a couple of different areas. I'm well on board with what you say, Derek, about how the games of Huberdeau and Lindholm have come along over the last couple of weeks. And to be honest, I'm not entirely unsure that they wouldn't have come along had that line stayed together. Yeah. I think they might have,
maybe
as a
faster
matter of fact. Exactly. But I think in their own way, they've come a long way from when that line started. But I also think that there's more of an understanding now that this lineup slots better, and I think comes out on paper, at least, Pat, better when that trio is together, when the three of them are together. And I still have to believe that putting your best playmaking forward in Jonathan Huberdeau on a line consistently with Tyler Toffoli and Elias Lindholm makes the most sense for this group. I know that sometimes there's growing pains in getting there, and it's not always perfect, but to me, that's what just gives me the most sense is I think when you look at this lineup and you look at who can play well with who, I mean, Elias Lindholm had 40 goals last year, guys. That's not an accident. And I think that, you know, Jonathan Huberdeau's playmaking ability, the fact that he is creative when it comes to getting the puck to his wingers or whoever is playing center with, I think that those traits work well with one another. And I think sometimes we can be so hesitant and so, I think we can be so demanding that what we want happens right away that we don't give it the proper time to develop. And I think that in their own ways, being apart has helped them develop that. Now I think being back together on a line with all three of them together is really going to come together this time and be what we hoped it would be from the start.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it's going to go, but I'm feeling the reason is, the main reason for me is just that Huberdeau's game is in a much better spot. It was very much coming around prior, and it was an adjustment in the first 5, 6, 7 games, however long they were together to start the year. It's rounded far more into form. It's still not exactly where he wants it to be. I still think there's some steps to be taken, but I think the fact that Huberdeau's game is at a much higher level means there's a much better chance this can be successful. And let's be honest, this is the line that I think all three of us really thought could work prior to the start of the season. And the line that we talked about, yeah, put Lindholm and Huberto together and put Toffoli on the right. And we thought there was a lot of potential there for a reason. So let's see if this time around it can get to that potential or a little bit closer to it.
And I was listening to Chris Versteeg on the Eric Francis show yesterday, the former Flame, and I've always enjoyed his opinions. I think he's really dialed into the game. He was as a player, and he has been as a broadcaster since retiring. And he talked about really leaning on your top guys when you're struggling. You know how many times Jonathan Huberto has played more than 20 minutes in a game this season?
I'm going to say twice.
Once. Do you know how many times Elias Lindholm, who by far led the Flames in time on ice for forwards last season, has played over 20 minutes in a game this season? Six times in 21 games. Mm. So I wouldn't mind seeing the Flames lean a little bit heavier on those two guys because, again, you got your best passer in Huberto, your best shooter in Lindholm, and I think sooner or later they're going to start to click. And you think about the fact that the Flames were 5-1-0 to start the season when that line wasn't working. So it's not all about that line. They need more from Nazem Kadri, Dylan Dubé, and Andrew Mangiapane. They need more from Michael Backlund and whoever he's playing with. Tonight it looks like it'll be Adam Rzeczka and Blake Coleman. So they need more from a bunch of guys, but they definitely need more from Huberto, and I think they're going to start to get it now that he's back together with Lindholm and Toffoli.
And Daryl's talked about that, even coming back from that six-game road trip, guys. He talked about giving Huberto more minutes because he felt like his game's been in a better spot. Well, if that's the case, then he should be able to play up there with Elias Lindholm and get those extra minutes. You talk about needing that extra goal. If you need that extra goal in your game, I feel like putting that line together is your best chance at getting that extra goal.
He's Derek. He's Logan. I'm Pat. That is your Daily Flames Roundtable on a Tuesday. It's brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. For the Mercedes-Benz enthusiast, find the perfect present at the Mercedes-Benz boutique online at mercedes-benzcountryhills.ca. To the text line we go at 960-960. Few of them on, and mostly on the Matthew Tkachuk and how he's going to be received in this game against Florida. Personally, I don't understand why the fan would want to boo Tkachuk. Am I disappointed that he doesn't want to re-sign with the Flames? Of course I am. Then again, I was not a young 23-year-old player stuck at home or at the rink without any family close by for support during COVID. So when he has the chance to go back to the States, he made the decision to do so. What's more, Tkachuk didn't pull a Johnny and manned up by telling Treliving his true intentions so that the Flames could get something back in the trade. This says biggest boo to least boo. Johnny, Adam Fox, Tkachuk, Monty. Monty should be cheered if he scores. Okay, fair enough. This says, I am absolutely cheering for Matthew. He gave everything he had in this franchise along with their GM coaches. Didn't pull their weight for these guys over their tenure. This says, if there was a boo applause spectrum, it would go Gaudreau, Tkachuk, Monahan. This says, can't fault a guy for wanting to live somewhere else, especially the climate in Florida where he can golf every day off. That being said, I'll learn to hate him quickly, I'm sure. This says, here are some of the other ones on the other side. Fake-ass, two-face, blowing smoke, just like Johnny. At least we got something for him. Okay.
Whoa.
My Tkachuk jersey will be going over the glass tonight. Okay.
No. Okay. Come on.
Travis says, Pat, hearing Tkachuk talk about his time in Calgary feels like getting dumped and knowing it's only because you were ugly. Okay.
Travis, I kind of said something earlier on Sportsnet Today about that. Kind of felt that way.
I'm here to defend my city. It's not an ugly city. I mean, we're not on the ocean. I get it. But and this says, Tkachuk should get the Fox treatment. Doesn't matter what he did for the team. You're either helping this team win or you're against them. Go Flames. So, see, that's why I think, just based on our text line, that's why I think could absolutely be a very mixed reaction when Matthew Tkachuk hits the ice against the Flames. It is a Tuesday edition of Flames Talk here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts. And it is time for your Tuesday Flames Talk Best Bets. They're brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. #MakeAPlay. Free play only. 18+. Play responsibly. Okay.
We went 1-0 on our best bets Monday, so off to a good start to the week. We hit the Tage Thompson over 3.5 shots, so we're 1-0 on the week with a bunch more to come for the Flames and Panthers. Now, we gave you these on Monday. I told you to get on the Flames money line early because it was going to move, and it did. It was minus 140 on Monday. It's already moved to minus 160 with some of the other, like Barkov's not playing. Panthers go to overtime. They're on game two of a back-to-back. The Flames are going with the hot goaltender in Vladar. Like, all of that, it's moved. So the Flames are down to minus 160. So hopefully you got on the Flames money line if you're liking it on Monday at minus 140. Still decent value at minus 160, but still. Also told you to get on the Flames puck line at minus 1.5 or to for them to win by 2. Right now that's paying plus 160 over at Bodog. So Flames money line, Flames puck line, we already told you about. Here's a couple of player props. I got to go Huberdeau playing against his former team. He should have got a point against them in Florida, but he didn't. He did set up a turnover or force a turnover that I still believe he got a stick on, but they didn't credit him with an assist, but it would led to the Blake Coleman goal. He did score a shootout goal, which doesn't count either, but I'm going to go Huberdeau over half a point, which is paying minus 193, and I'm going to Lindholm on his line over half a point, paying minus 164. Not the greatest value there, but if you want to sprinkle a little bit on some player props, I'll go Huberdeau to record a point and Lindholm to record a point, and we'll give you the verdict on the Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. Also on the Wednesday edition of Flames Talk, Flames general manager Brad Treliving will join us to break down the first quarter of the season. So to recap for the Flames and Panthers, Flames on the money line, Flames on the puck line, and then over half a point for Huberdeau and for Lindholm. See how it goes. Those are your Flames Talk best bets on a Tuesday. Brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. #MakeAPlay. Free play only. 18+. Play responsibly.